Leo, can you tell me about the event you're organizing for Bernie coming up?
Yeah, well, I'm organizing it along with a bunch of people at the High Horse in Amherst, and that's a bar right in downtown Amherst. We're doing a Beers for Bernie event. This is a fundraiser for Bernie Sanders' campaign, and that event is going to be on Thursday, August 6th. From 7 to 9 p.m., Thursday, August 6th, 7 to 9. And, of course, it's a bar, so we're encouraging people to stay on and continue the conversation. We're going to have live music. I'll do an update on the campaign, and the response has been pretty incredible. And the staff at the High Horse, the bartenders, the kitchen staff, they're fully on board. They're wearing their Bernie buttons, a bunch of them. They're on board. And it's a good way to, you know, just get people together. This is happening all over the country. In bars and breweries, people gathering for Bernie Sanders. That campaign is on fire, and the best way to quench a fire is with
beer.
So join us. Although we're not going to put that fire out, we're going to fuel it. So join us at the High Horse Thursday, August 6th, 7 to 9 p.m., and I'm sure there will be many other Beer for Bernie events around the valley as this starts to take off.
Who are my neighbors? Tune in to Out There to meet some of them. Out There airs every Wednesday from 4 to 5 in the afternoon with me, Ruthie Woodring. Come with me and my recorder to meet people and plants and think about ways we can share the world. That's Out There every Wednesday from 4 to 5 p.m. here on Valley Free Radio, WXOJLP, 103.3 FM, Northampton. Archived editions of Out There are online at weatherbeard.com/RUTHY. Get out if you can, but if you can't get out, tune in. So, welcome out there. Today's edition is about the CSO workers that started to strike today. CSO stands for Clinical and Support Options. They have about 550 employees working with about 14,000 individuals across Western Massachusetts. And they receive about 85% of their funding from the state. I've interviewed a bunch of people that were at the picket line today out on Atwood Drive by the Clarion Hotel on Route 5 in Northampton. And I also have an interview with Ben Ross that I did a few days ago. Ben works for CSO. And so I think I'm just going to start with this interview with Ben.
I'm Ben Ross. I'm an outpatient clinician. I work a combination of outreach in people's homes and in office psychotherapy. With, you know, individuals, families, kids, anybody who comes in and needs to be seen.
And what does CSO stand for?
It stands for Clinical and Support Options.
Okay.
It's the largest human service agency in Western Mass. They do a whole range of services, you know, from substance abuse treatment to individual therapy, family therapy, to group homes, to crisis services. So, and they have other services, I don't know, Clubhouse. So.
How long have you been working for them?
I've been there almost 5 years.
Mm-hmm. And is that typical, or what's like the average amount of time that people would work there? And do you like your job?
Well, so in terms of the time, it's unusual. I'm one of the clinicians who's been around the longest at this point. There's only probably a handful of us out of, you know, about 400 people who work in direct therapy jobs at CSO who are, have been there longer than 3 years, you know. At this point, the turnover is just tremendous.
Uh-huh. There's about 400
I don't know. Yeah, something around that. You know,
in
I don't know the exact figures. But
in Western Massachusetts?
Yeah, it's spread throughout, you know, all the towns that they cover. It's quite a few towns.
Okay. So you've been there about 5 years.
Yeah.
How do you like it?
I like my job. I like being with people and having real conversations and developing deep relationships. Mm-hmm. That's what really draws me to it. I love being part of people's lives in a very deep and impactful way, you know, and that makes me grow as a human being, and I feel amazed to see what people go through. So, mm-hmm. you know, that piece of it I love. Yeah, I would say in terms of the agency, it has a lot of difficulties, and it can be a place where I feel kind of burned out at times. So that's, you know, a longer story.
Uh-huh. Well, we're going to get to that.
Right.
If you're willing.
Okay.
Now, what are some of the ways that the agency could do things better in terms of keeping employees around and well-balanced in their lives?
Yeah, I mean, I think people get really overworked as well as overstressed. And I think there are a number of factors with that. One is, you know, the level of productivity that they require for you to be a full-time staff there. The number of clients you have to see on a weekly basis is very high, and there's a lot of paperwork you have to do outside mm-hmm. of that's not counted in those productivity hours, and a lot of meetings that you go to that mm-hmm. are not counted in that. So anybody who wants to be full-time and receive benefits like paid vacations, sick time, those are the benefits that I'm aware of that they would receive, they would need to be working more like 60 to 70 hours a week to keep up with that. And if they don't, and you can't always control how many clients are showing up, so only direct client hours count as productivity. Uh-huh. So you can't control on a weekly basis how many of your clients show up. People mm-hmm. have all kinds of things going on in their lives. You know, it's mm-hmm. not just they don't show up if they don't like you or something. Uh-huh. You know, I'm sure sometimes that happens, but it's also like people are very busy dealing with a lot, and they often can't make it. And as a clinician, you can't control that. Mm-hmm. As it quickly gets pretty complicated. You can't. They won't give you your benefits for sick time or health insurance if you didn't meet your productivity hours. So I'm getting kind of like caught up in.
No, that's what I want to hear. I just have some questions as you go along.
Okay.
So
I mean, to have more people be able to be full time. Otherwise, everybody falls into this thing called fee for service, which means you get paid per client that you see. So you don't have vacation time you're getting paid for. You don't have sick time. And you're working still a lot of hours, about 2 hours for every hour that you get paid, oftentimes. Uh-huh.
So when you say productivity hours, okay, you said that you're required to do this paperwork, and the paperwork doesn't count towards the productivity hours.
Yeah,
so,
and other things, meetings and phone calls.
So are the productivity hours the same as the hours you get paid for, or do you get paid for non-productivity hours?
No, not at all. Not at all. You're just supposed to, you know, keep up with that in some way. I mean, they just don't count it at all, really. Huh. There's an expectation that, oh, this shouldn't be taking you very long, but it takes a lot of people very long to keep up with it. It's really extensive.
So you get paid by the hour, or is it salary?
By the hour, you know.
So you're because doing all this work you're not getting paid for.
I'm fee for service. Yeah, exactly. You end up doing a lot of work that
and
you don't get paid for.
And it's paperwork. Who wants to do paperwork? You want to be with the clients, right?
Well, yes. That's why I got in the field, not to do tons of paperwork that is of questionable value to my mind. You're doing tons of paperwork on a computer system that's really hard to figure out. Mm. And a point for a lot of people was that, you know, they introduced this whole computer system and it was very hard to figure out. And they gave us one training on it. You weren't even paid to go to the trainings. Mm-hmm. We spent the whole training I went to figuring out how to log on to the computer system. Uh-huh. Everything else was like, figure it out on your own, you know? And it just continues to be difficult. I mean, you never know when the thing's going to be down. I mean, this is more of like it's not the big picture that I really want to talk about, but it's one element of like, here's something we deal with on a daily basis. We work really hard to figure this out. They didn't give us adequate resources to get, you know, up to speed on this computer system. And they don't recognize how long it takes mm-hmm. to use it, and mm-hmm. and that's an issue for everybody I know there, except like a couple of people who are super whizzes, and like more power to them. Mm-hmm. But there are a lot of us who are not super whizzes with computers, mm-hmm. you know? And I'm one of them. And it's hard. It's hard when people are raising a family, especially, and to work, you know, 60 or 70 hours a week in order to make barely above poverty wages as a fee-for-service clinician, it just burns people out. And there's a lot of turnover, and that is not good for clients. And, mm-hmm. and having clinicians who are exhausted or stressed is not really good for clients. And, you know, if somebody has to see 10 people in a day, which many people schedule 10 people in a day, that's not the same quality of care that you would get if you were seeing, you know, 5 people a day and you had enough time to really think about what you're doing with each person and really formulate that in a much deeper way, you know. I mean, it's not that people don't do good work. Even in that circumstance, they're just at their limit, you know. It's intense stuff. Yeah. People come in with a lot of trauma and they're dealing with poverty and just like basic, like, do I have enough food? And like, that's a big issue for a lot of people. And, you know, it's amazing to see that here in the Valley. That's quite an issue for many people. Or is my housing safe? You know, yeah, there's a lot. Anyway, suffice to say.
So what are some of the employees doing to try and make the working conditions better?
Yeah, I mean, basically we just want really... All we've asked for in this current round of negotiations about our contract is to have just basic cost of living increases in our contract. You know, I mean, at this point, it would be nice if the productivity hours were reduced, but okay, you know, we aren't even expecting that. We're basically expecting like really a modest percentage of raise, you know, more than 1%, you know, a year that will cover some more of our costs of living. And, to have retirement benefits be available to people who've been in the agency a long time and are older and, you know, they need just to keep, going in their lives. So it's really pretty modest. I mean, to be able to make it doable to be a full-time worker, you know, to just have just a little bit more of a cushion. We're just asking to not be quite so burdened with the low salary.
So how have the people who work there organize to try and negotiate what's going on with that?
Yeah, I mean, we, you know, for 8 months since October, our union has been meeting with the CSO management and our union, as well as a good friend of mine who volunteered to be in these negotiations out of, you know, his belief that if we just communicated our needs clearly, that management, of course, would understand that we're overstressed and doing a lot of unpaid work. And it went nowhere. They didn't go anywhere with the management. The upper management did not offer any negotiating with our team. And they have even more so hired a lawyer who's known as a union buster. And you know, our union at this point has negotiated against itself, you know, to lower their what they're asking for. The impression from people who I know who have been at these meetings for a long time is that we've just been totally stonewalled. It's just that there's not an interest in negotiating and that we have to take, you know, a stand and kind of demand that we get paid a fair wage, you know.
Mm-hmm. What's management's position?
Management's position is that the hourly wage is competitive for our field, you know, compares good to other agencies or compares well, and that basically they can't reduce the productivity hours because they say that would put the agency in financial jeopardy, which doesn't really seem accurate to me or many other people. So that's what I've heard them say about it, that, you know, we should be able to make plenty of money. I guess they just don't take into account it's hard for someone to be a full-time worker and live not knowing if they're going to lose their benefits, their health insurance, not knowing if their productivity requirements are going to make them have to work a whole week of free work because they didn't have enough clients show up the previous couple of weeks. I mean, it's untenable for most people to be salaried employees. And the fee-for-service work includes so much unpaid work. It doesn't seem like management reflects that. They just say, well, you make a good hourly wage.
And when they talk about the hourly wage, they're not including the unpaid work.
Right, so our actual hourly wage is really much less than what keeps being listed in the news or whatever.
What kind of information has gone out in the news, like in the Gazette, or have you...
Oh, there's been things, you know, like they'll cite that we make $33 an hour, which is a good hourly wage, but it's not that good if you're doing 2 hours for every hour you get paid, you know. If you're raising 2 kids, that is a poverty level to be at. And to try to be doing that you have to keep up with the paperwork or you're in jeopardy of losing your job. So sometimes you have to put in these really long hours. Mm-hmm. And how are people supposed to do that, you know, who mm-hmm. have a lot of responsibilities to mm-hmm. their family and just need to take care of themselves? Yeah. But anyway, also it's been put out there that, or there was the CEO who was quoted in the paper saying, you know, we can't give in to the union's demands to be paid more to do less work. And that's mm-hmm. really not accurate way of portraying what we're asking for.
How did you feel when you read that or heard that?
I felt angry. I felt like it was a way of saying, look, we, like, it's the workers' fault. Like, they're not, like, they want to be lazy. If they just worked hard enough, you know, and were efficient enough, they would be able to make a great wage. And I don't think that's a realistic approach at all. Yeah, I feel like it's kind of like they've set up a system that gets a lot of unpaid work out of people, and then you get to blame people if they don't keep up with it. Like, that, I feel very angry about that. And I just, that's my impression of what it's saying, and I just think they're not valuing what people mm-hmm. are doing, which mm-hmm. is really going over the top, because people really do care a lot about their clients, and they go over the top for them.
Yeah.
And we just want a little bit of both recognition and a little, like, extra help, you know, like, mm-hmm. which the agency can afford.
So do you have any hope that things will get better as an employee or for the employees?
I do have hope. I mean, there was a strike. This place, the Breen Center in the Berkshires, called the strike. They didn't end up having to go on strike because the management negotiated at the last minute. So, you know, it's unfortunate that we've reached the point where none of our attempts to negotiate, which we had many attempts, went anywhere. And so a strike has been called, and I still have hope that something could be negotiated before then. We're just really asking for not huge increases, you know, like, we would take like 3% a year, you know, and that would reflect cost of living increases and the fact that we got no increases, you know, in our last contract. Well, I guess we got like a 1% kind of in our last contract, but anyway, I do have hope, and I don't think a strike is good for anybody, but I think it unfortunately, like, highlights that enough of us, the vast majority of workers, almost everybody there, feels like we are really not being treated fairly, and that I think people get that. Yeah. I mean, overall, I think people understand.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think if we do go on strike, I think management has kind of been counting that we wouldn't, honestly. People I know, it's just like last straw. Like, we can't yeah. just keep not having a voice and you know, how we're being treated.
Yeah. What kind of support does a strike have from other organizations or people that you're aware of?
Yeah, I mean, there's other human service agencies in the Valley that have said they would send people over. I've heard there's support from Nurses Union. You know, we're the Service Employees International Union, or that's our union at CSO, and so I think there's going to be a lot of people who belong to that union who are showing up. I feel pretty confident there's support out there. We had a rally before, and people were showing up from other agencies. I didn't even know who they were, really. Mm-hmm. But it was great. It was mm-hmm. like, oh wow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. It means a lot.
Yeah. Anything else you want to say?
You know, I guess I just want to say that I think it matters that we just have a society where we're really prioritizing taking care of vulnerable people in a lot of ways. You know, I mean, whether that's teachers or workers at a human service agency or nurses in hospitals, or, you know, I mean, there's so many service positions that are so undervalued, and I think our people are exploited in all kinds of ways. And just to stand up and say, you know, we got to be able to take care of ourselves in order to do this really important work mm-hmm. of being there for people who really, really need it. And it's not just about the money. It's about our values. We value a society of deep connection and where people really, like, take care of each other. And we just want to see that reflected in the agency we work in a very mm-hmm. basic way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, from knowing you, I can see that your passion for your clients and trying to bring about, like, healing in so many, on so many different levels. So I wish you all the best.
Thank you. Thank you.
You've been listening to an interview with Ben Ross, who works at CSO, Clinical and Support Options, in Northampton. CSO workers started their strike today. I have some more recordings from the picket line that we'll get back to in a little bit. This is Out There. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring, and you're listening to Valley Free Radio, WXOJ LP, Northampton. And this is a social worker song by Mike McClung.
Everybody ought to have a social worker just like you, just like you, to sit with them and resolve all their issues like you do when they are blue. If perchance I chance to die, my dying prayer will be that I can beg, borrow, rent, steal, or buy a social worker just like you. Hold my hand when I'm alone, put me on the telephone so I can talk to some of my own, remind me of my childhood home, visit me when I'm in jail, find a way to make my bail, reconcile me with my exes, ship my body back to Texas. Everybody ought to have a social worker just like ours, just like ours, to hunt down healthcare workers and hamburgers and hassle with OOHDNRs. Swift as Sarah, logical as Lee, likable as Lisa with Katie's energy. Don't you love it when she says, my friend, everybody ought to have one just like them. Hold my hand when I'm alone, put me on the telephone so I can talk to some of my own, remind me of my childhood home, visit me when I'm in jail, find a way to make my bail, reconcile me with my exes, ship my body back to Texas. Everybody ought to have a social worker like these four, like these four, fix their brain when they have gone berserker than they ever thought they'd ever go before. When life has got you feeling rough and hydrocodone's not enough, you need the assistance of a social worker like these four. And don't you know that the world would be so poor if we didn't have social workers like these four.
A Baha'i Perspective, hosted by Warren Odess Gillette, is a weekly radio broadcast of biographical interviews of people who have either chosen the Baha'i Faith as a way of life or who have a relationship with the Baha'i Faith. You can listen to the broadcast on Saturdays at 10 a.m. on WXOJLP 103.3 FM. That's Valley Free Radio.
I found a Baha'i today. It looks so good. Why did you throw it?
You want to learn to fix your bike? How to keep it tuned up so it's there for you when you need it? Or maybe you know already, but you just need to borrow a bike-specific tool that you don't have. Well, come to the Bike Lab.
Almost every Saturday since 2004, from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m., here in Northampton at 12 Northern Avenue.
Come with your bike or your questions.
And your willing attitude.
Spare parts scavenger hunt every weekend.
Venga para el Bike Lab de Northampton y se divertirá mucho, le enseñará muchas lecciones cómo arreglar bicicletas.
All repairs guaranteed to the end of the driveway.
Details are online at pedalpeople.coop. That's the Saturday Bike Lab at 12 Northern Avenue, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. They say freedom isn't free, but at the Bike Lab it is.
Ya súbase a la bici, compa. Trépese a la de montaña, la bici urbana, la bici cross. Lléguele a la bicicleta. Ya de menos a la eléctrica o a la estática, ya no hay tos. Llegaré pedaleando en el viaje de allá para acá.
So we're going to go back to the picket line at the CSO workers were at today. And I want to say thanks to Dwayne Rainey. He's usually here in the studio with me, but he did my route for me this morning to give me time to go down to the picket line. So thanks, Dwayne.
CSO negotiate.
Wise and Trent will not divide.
Workers standing side by side.
Woo! Woo!
So there's a number of people here from the other labor unions that are active in organizing.
It's time for all of us to let people know, people in large corporations, that we're here and we work for them. And we deserve to raise a family decently, just like they do. Thank you.
Well, I am so sorry to have to see you guys out on the line, because as a nurse, I know how important your role is and how the work you do affects members of our community every day. What strikes me important today is about the clients that you all serve, many of whom are MassHealth clients and whose families probably couldn't make it out here today to join you, but who definitely support you. The nurses are here with you. We support you. We understand your struggle. This is Andrea Fox from the Mass Nurses Association, and we're here with you today.
Right. So standing up here today is not just standing up for yourselves, but standing up for everybody in this community, especially the most vulnerable people that need it.
Right on.
So thanks, everybody, for... So I'm Dave. I work as an emergency medical technician. I work with patients too. I understand real closely, you know, what it means to have those working conditions and how that equals better patient care.
What do we want?
Contracts.
When do we want it?
Now.
What do we want?
Contracts.
When do we want it?
Now.
What do we want?
Contracts.
When do we want it?
Now.
When the CEO states that they are offering a 3% raise to salaried staff at the agency, that is true. But it ignores the fact that the vast majority of staff at CSO are not salaried employees. For those who are not salaried employees, they will effectively lose money each year under the contract that Karen Jeffers, the CEO of this agency, has proposed.
Because it's a 1% increase and doesn't keep up with inflation.
Does not keep up with the cost of living. You know, and we're talking about master's level clinicians who in some cases carry multiple professional licenses and work with some of the most at-risk and vulnerable populations in Western Massachusetts. Their work is vital to the safety and well-being of tens of thousands of families each year. And yet, they are being offered close to or under poverty-level wages. It's unconscionable at a taxpayer-funded, nonprofit mental health agency.
When you say poverty wages, how are those figured, or what numbers are you working with?
So the federal poverty level is around $25,000 to $26,000 a year, whether you're an hourly worker or a salaried employee for a family of four, for the average family of four. And most clinicians and crisis workers here have families. And that's the federal poverty line for a family of four. That doesn't account for the significantly higher cost of living in a state like Massachusetts. And you have over a third of clinicians and crisis staff here earning poverty-level wages.
I wonder if either of you could speak to how the difficulties that people have if they want to be salaried. Like, how hard is it to work 40 hours or what they count, like 40 productivity hours? I'm sure it's kind of a week.
I mean, most of our contracts come from MassHealth, so you can assume that we're dealing with families who are living in poverty, who have big transportation issues, who have childcare issues, who just you know, are mentally ill and have difficulty getting here. So the turnover rate for the staff is between 30% and 50%. So we're there ready to work, and then all of a sudden our, you know, half of our clients don't show up for a day. Well, we don't get paid for that half a day at all. And we're required to meet a certain number of billable hours every week. So when those people don't show up, we also don't get credit for those billable hours. So then our healthcare gets compromised.
Because we have to qualify. Yeah. However many hours a week
to qualify. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
How long have you been working here?
A little over a year.
Do you know many people that have been working here more than, say, 5 years?
No. No, the turnover is incredible. It's very, very stressful. It's stressful for a multitude of reasons.
Did you do this kind of work before you started working for CSO? Or did you come from a different line of work?
I've been a social worker. I've had my MSW for about 10 years. So, yeah.
How does this compare with the kind of work you were doing before? In terms of your enjoyment or fulfillment?
You know, I love the work. I love working with this population, and I would just like to see it paid more fairly. I was in private practice before, and it was a lot easier in many levels. But the commitment to social justice and serving, you know, high-need populations is what kind of keeps me here. And I think it's important. I think we need to look at the fee structures and how these workers get paid and how to keep community mental health alive, because it's really at risk. What happens all the time is clinicians come in, they stay long enough to get their license, and then they're out doing private practice, which is private pay, which means the impoverished community doesn't have access. And that's a real threat.
Do you have any thoughts on, like, where the money comes from, where it goes, where it should go? Like the money comes in from state or insurance companies that are billed for billable hours, and then do you know where the money should come from for y'all to get paid more? Is it going to the CEO's pocket, or how is it, where is it going? Any ideas on how that all goes around?
What I do know, and I can't quote this, I'm very bad at remembering numbers. I know that we get paid between $33 and $41 an hour, depending on the service. And the company bills anywhere from $110 to $190, I think, per billable service. So that split is, there's a very wide divide there. You know, the fact that an organization can find itself righteous in not offering retirement benefits to its staff, its frontline workers, and offer 5% matches to management. There's something to evaluate there, something to question. Making it a more collaborative, bottom-up kind of thing. And that's what we've been asking for. But, I mean, it's interesting because this agency sort of touts itself as a very progressive, collaborative, cooperative, you know, like they're going through an accreditation process right now, which is supposed to be a best practice agency model and supposed to really take into account all of the staff issues and problems and how to better deliver services, and it's supposed to be this very collaborative process where they're getting staff input, and that's really not happening. It's like it's been kind of just laughable that they're going through this process while we sent a letter to the management in January laying out all of the issues that staff are having in doing their job and laying out the problem of turnover and the problem of no-shows affecting our budgets and our productivity and not having benefits and all of this stuff, and how, you know, it's ultimately hurting the end consumer who deserves the service. And we didn't even, 87% of employees signed that letter, and we didn't even get acknowledged that it was received.
I thought there was a problem.
It was completely offensive.
They addressed any of the issues at all about our sense of many hours that we do in productivity that we don't get paid for. So we have to work an average of 40 hours a week, but we actually only get paid half of that when we get our paychecks. From the time you put in all of the work that we're doing administratively, because they've cut back on all their administrative help. So we've had to pick up the slack, you know, make call our own clients for appointments, do all the PCPs, all the medical doctor's communications we have to do. We have to do extra faxing for hours that we don't get paid for. We have to do additional work, And they're telling us that they can't give us the, we need to increase our productivity, and that they're not going to even give us the money for the extra hours that we are putting in. So by the time they say we get $36 an hour, we actually get $16. That's what we're making now. And when we get our paychecks per every 2 weeks, it's so like peanuts.
What kind of a decision was it for you to go on strike knowing that you weren't going to get paid for today and maybe the next few days?
For me, this whole, quote, negotiation process has been like an abusive relationship. They hired this union-busting lawyer who had absolutely no intention of negotiating on any point, practically any point of import. And it's just been offensive. Like, we've been making these pleas and trying to get them to understand and writing letters and really trying our best to make this work for everyone. And it was so demoralizing to be working this hard and be doing such important work in the community and have such disparity between Karen Jeffers and her retirement and her salary, and to be so ignored. That for me, it was like, this just can't exist. As a social worker, you know, we have responsibilities for social justice and change, and I couldn't back down from this particular statement. I don't feel like we're going to win anything. I don't think they're really going to budge, but at least if we raise some awareness, this is a systemic problem, you know, and that's what Karen Jeffers said. Oh, well, it's not our fault. The insurance companies only reimburse what they reimburse. And yeah, that's true, and that needs to change. But when you look at the real distribution of those reimbursements, it's not making sense.
Where is the money going?
First of all, the money is going to the fact that they bought two, three buildings, large agency buildings, one in Greenfield, one in Northampton, worth about $4 million. The new building in Greenfield is 3.5, and then the Crisis, they bought a big building there, it was about 3.5. So they put in about $8 million just on their new buildings. Mm-hmm. So obviously, you know, their expansion in their buildings was more important than the quality care for their clinicians. That's number one. So they also gave increases to their upper management for raises. They gave HR and they gave, you know, Karen and all these people retirement benefits. And that was a 5% increase. So there's that. That's where it's going. Why I am striking today is I've been in the negotiations since October. And, you know, we've put a lot of blood, sweat, and tears into helping listening to all the other workers who are disenfranchised and not being paid. It was a lot to strike today because, you know, we had many people on the line from so many months that didn't want to go against management and wanted to try to work something out. We tried very hard, 8 months, to work something out with them every step of the way. And there was nothing that they had, not even an inch, except for 2 cents. But it got down to 2 cents is what they were going to offer us last night. After 4 hours of deliberation, they said they would give us 2 extra cents for mileage.
Our family support workers that do in-home services, you know, most of these are bachelor's-level clinicians who, you know, they're making just at the poverty level. They're making like,
probably like $10
an hour. Yeah, it's crazy. And they're driving all over the place. They don't have money to be subsidizing the damage to their cars and the wear and tear and the gas. And unfortunately, these are the workers who they're so financially pinched and so afraid for their jobs that they, a lot of them just didn't have the courage to come out here. So we're kind of fighting for them, you know? There was a lot of fear tactics and intimidation tactics as soon as we announced that we authorized a strike vote. All of a sudden, HR and Karen Jeffers started sending these emails that just put everybody into a panic. And there was a lot of mistruths and manipulation, you know? Yeah. Oh, you're going to lose your health insurance. Well, no, you're not. There's Health Connect. There's MassHealth. You know, you're going to lose your job. You're going to be replaced. My clients and I have a very special relationship. Right. They don't want anybody else. They don't want anybody new. How are you going to replace me, really? Yeah. How dare you say that to me? They say that it's all factored in, that we get these holidays and this sick time, and you look at it and it's an absolute farce. There's no time off built into that system whatsoever.
Can you read me what that sign says?
It says, we're not your heifers.
So the strike is authorized for the next 3 days, right? Mm-hmm. Do you have any hope that there might be any more negotiations between now and Friday?
Yeah, we're hoping, but
I don't have hope that they're going to move their position at all, frankly. Uh-huh. They haven't shown that there's going to be any change. You know, the problem is we're working with such at-risk families and children. you know, and all of us are social workers with huge hearts who don't want our clients at risk. And so some ongoing endless strike really didn't feel okay ethically.
This is not good for our clients, and they're supporting us.
Most of that interview was with Lori Stroland. You're listening to Valley Free Radio, WXOJLP 103.3 FM, Northampton. And this is Out There. I've been playing clips from a CSO Clinical and Support Options employees strike going on today, Thursday, and Friday outside their headquarters in Northampton on Atwood Drive near the Clarion Hotel on Route 5 by the interstate. And oh, I wanted to mention something else that Ben had said. My friend Ben Ross, who I had interviewed at the very beginning, he posted on his Facebook, he said, "I don't want to disrupt care for my clients, and nobody does, nor do I like the uncertainty of all this for my colleagues or myself, honestly. But it seems to me that sometimes we just have to stand up, because otherwise business as usual means exploitation. I'm holding the intention to remember this more often, to stand in solidarity with others who are exploited and oppressed in ways much worse than this, rooting my life and serving a common good in the best way I can discern." That was part of Ben's statement. I'm going to go back to a few more clips from the picket line.
So there's been a tow truck parked in front of CSO the whole morning. Do you know what they're doing there?
They've stated that they will tow anybody who parks in any of the parking lots connected with the CSO, these two buildings on Atwood Drive.
But that's not their normal position.
Oh, no, they're never here. No, the security guard, the tow trucks, they're making it clear that we're not welcome. And the last time we were here for the rally, there were tow trucks here, but they weren't towing us. It was just an intimidation tactic. And I don't think they're towing anybody today either.
Okay. It's very curious. Not only is there a tow truck, there are also two security guards posted in front of the building. Excuse me, sir. I'm just doing a little radio piece on the strike and stuff and what's going on. And they said that there's never security guards here, except for today. Is this your first time here?
No problem.
Okay. I'm sure you're probably not allowed to say anything, are you?
Exactly.
Okay, anyway.
Well, the fact that we're encouraging our families to stand up for themselves and find their voice, how can I not do it for myself?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What are some of the things about your job that just don't seem fair?
Well, I'm a family partner. I travel Hampshire County, Franklin County. They don't take the time that I'm on the road into consideration for my billable hours.
What might a driving day look like for you?
Well, Fridays I tend to go to Heath. I have a couple of days that I go to Plainfield. I had a family in Ashfield that I couldn't all see any of them until afternoon, so I couldn't clump them together.
And so you don't get paid for all these hours?
I have to flex it out, but there's times that it's not able to. So I end up putting in overtime that I don't get paid for. They don't take the time that we're on the road into consideration for our billable hours, but we do get paid mileage. And CSO has offered us a penny increase. And we had asked for the federal rate. Uh-huh. And they offered us a penny, so we'll go up to 44, 45 cents a mile. Uh-huh. There's a good percentage of us that don't make $15 an hour. Uh-huh. With degrees. Because uh-huh. They've talked about it in a few of the union meetings.
Yeah.
When they go by.
All right, that's what I've got for the CSO workers strike. Like I said, they'll be out there Thursday and Friday as well, I think, unless they come to some agreement in the contract with CSO management. Out There being in front of the offices on Atwood Drive by the Clarion. You've been listening to Out There. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. I have this, Pete Seeger. This is called Talkin' Union.
Now, you want higher wages, let me tell you what to do. Got to talk to the workers in the shop with you. You got to build you a union, got to make it strong. But if you all stick together, boys, won't be long. You got shorter hours, better working conditions, vacations with pay, take your kids to the seashore. Of course, it ain't quite that simple, so I better explain just why you got to ride on the union train. Because if you wait for the boss to raise your pay, we'll all be waiting till Judgment Day. We'll all be buried, gone to heaven. St. Peter will be the straw boss then, boys. Now you know you're underpaid, but the boss says you ain't. He speeds up the work till you're about to faint. You may be down and out, but you ain't beaten. Pass out a leaflet, call a meeting, talk it over. Speak your mind, decide to do something about it. Cause the boss may persuade some poor damn fool to go to your meeting and act like a stool. But you can always tell a stool, though that's a fact. He's got a yellow streak running down his back. He doesn't have to stool, you know. He'll always make a good living on what he takes out of blind men's cups. Well, you got a union now. You're sitting pretty. Put some of the boys on the steering committee. The boss won't listen if one guy squawks, but he's got to listen if the union talks. He'd better. He'll be mighty lonely one of these days. Suppose he's working you so hard, it's just outrageous, paying you all starvation wages. You go to the boss would yell, "Before I raise your pay, I'd see you all in hell." Well, he's puffing a big cigar, feeling mighty slick, thinks he's got your union licked. He looks out the window and what does he see but 1,000 pickets, and they all agree he's a bastard. Unfair. Slave driver. Bet he beats his own wife. Now, boys, you come to the hardest time. The boss will try to bust your picket line. He'll call out the police, the National Guard, tell you it's a crime to have a union card. They'll raid your meeting, hit you on the head, call every one of you a goddamn red, young patriotic. Moscow agents, bomb throwers, even the kids. Well, out in Detroit, here's what they found. Down in Pittsburgh, here's what they found. Down in Bethlehem, here's what they found. Out in Frisco, here's what they found. That if you don't let red baiting break you up, if you don't let stool pigeons break you up, if you don't let race hatred break you up, if you don't let vigilantes break you up, you'll win. What I mean, take it easy, but take it.
And that was Pete Seeger. There's going to be a film coming up July 27th. It's part of the Northampton Committee to Stop War 2015 Summer Film Series. It's called Healing a Soldier's Heart, and it documents healing journeys to Vietnam. The discussion will introduce the audience to the work of Soldier's Heart, and possible subsequent activities that could be recommended would be the establishment of talking and listening circles between veterans and civilians. This will be at Forbes Library on West Street in Northampton, July 27th from 6:30 to 8:30. July 27th, that's a Monday. It's this coming Monday. The discussion will be led by Edward Tick. He's the author of War and the Soul and Warrior's Return, and the founder and director of Soldier's Heart. Here's a reminder that I played last week. I'll play it again, even though it's not that important, really, in the big scope of things.
This is Ruthie from Pedal People with a public service announcement. If you frequent downtown Northampton or Florence and you pass by the recycling and trash bins on the street, the public ones, I'm here to let you know that cups are not recyclable. No plastic cups, no paper cups, no styrofoam cups, no clear cups, red cups, blue cups, yellow cups, no insulated cups. Because if you put cups in the recycling bin, it means either I pick them out or someone at the sorting facility picks them out in Springfield, or it contaminates the whole load too much that the whole load is considered trash. Or if you can just bring your own cup altogether and not have disposable cups, that'd be even better. Thanks for listening, and thanks for your cooperation.
Dear Puerto Rican youth of Holyoke, one hot summer night, I was biking back to Northampton from Springfield. It was midnight, and the streets in Springfield were quiet. It was especially quiet in the industrial park area of Chicopee. So it was easier for me to notice this one particular vehicle whose driver passed me and pulled over and waited for me to pass, then drove by and pulled over again and waited for me to pass. The driver, a white man, pulled over just before the 116 bridge, and he parked in an empty lot with his headlights pointed to illuminate where I would ride by in front of him. It was a sultry summer night, and I was wearing short shorts and a thin tank top. And this guy was creeping me out, probably masturbating, waiting for me to ride by. There was only one feasible way to get across the Connecticut River and continue towards home. I rode fast across the long, narrow bridge, hoping he wouldn't pass me on it. Once I crossed into the flats of Holyoke, there you were, youth of Holyoke, in the streets on a hot summer night, and I was so grateful to see you and feel protected by your presence. Sincerely, Ruthie Woodring.
This is my housemate, Tomo. He's from Japan and studying English at ILI, International Language Institute.
Lawrence, and coming here to study English?
I like this tree, or trees, or people, or air. This air.
Yeah.
I like everything. For example, this area or very silent.
It's quiet.
Quiet. Mm-hmm. But everybody friendly.
Yeah.
When I went to play soccer, everybody talk with me. Mm-hmm. And now my English is very improved. Mm-hmm. Than I came here.
How is it being in a different culture? You don't speak the language, and the culture is different. How is that?
Share house is popular in America, but Japan is not popular. Uh-huh. It's share house. Uh-huh. But this is very good. I love share house because mm-hmm. every day we can meet somebody, mm-hmm. everybody.
Cool.
Yeah.
Brothers and sisters, the time has come for each and every one of you to decide. It takes 5 seconds, 5 seconds of decision. It takes 5 seconds to realize that it's time to move.
Get yourself to downtown Northampton, Mass on Friday nights, where a party has been going on for 26 years at the Valley's only all-ages, shoe-free, substance-free, alcohol-free, smoke-free dance spree. Six resident DJs, DJ Liquid G, DJ July, DJ Wheeler, DJ Alan S, DJ Zoe, and DJ Root, that's me, with a handle on booty-shaking tunes from yesterday and today, club, disco, hip-hop, world beat, funky breaks, progressive trance, oldies, swing, salsa, waltzes, and more. Part of the larger Dance New England network, Dance Spree has been providing a home for a vibrant and diverse community of folks who love to dance to a variety of music in a healthy atmosphere. Come check it out. Volunteers are always appreciated. Info online at dancespree.org or come by 8:30 p.m. Friday nights, 25 Main Street, 4th floor, downtown Northampton, Massachusetts.
I'm Rachel Maddow with the Pioneer Valley Planning Commission and the Franklin Regional Council of Governments for Valley Free Radio. Reminding you that legally, bicycles are vehicles, and bicyclists have the same rights and responsibilities and should observe the same rules as motorists. For more information on bicycle rights and safety, go to www.massbike.org.
Follow your heart, love will find you, truth will unbind you, seek out a song of the soul and
music touches places in the soul where words have no power. That's why we invite our guests to share the music that speaks of their spiritual path, journey, or beliefs for Song of the Soul. Often our guests are musicians, but sometimes they're simply folks with a deep connection to music, like you and me. Join me, Mark Helpsmeet, Wednesday at 2 p.m. for Song of the Soul. Hear some great music and travel with our guests on their spiritual journeys. The place to be is WXOJLP, 103.3 FM Valley Free Radio, Wednesday at 2 p.m. for Song of the Soul.
Let in the light, it will heal you, and you can feel you, and sing out a song of the soul and receive.
So that about does it for today's show. Stay tuned for Democracy Now! Up at 5 o'clock. This has been another edition of Out There. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. If you want to send an email to me about the show, Janra, who does a lot of volunteer work here for the station, I think he just set up email addresses for people, for programmers. And so you can email me at outthere@valleyfreeradio.org. Don't everyone email me at once, please. All right, stay tuned. Democracy Now! Is coming up next.